Now, last week, you were talking about the mass evacuation of South Africans to Blighty and other places, people concerned about the economy, and you were balancing it very nicely with stories of people saying to you, well, I want to go, and I must stay, and my business, and I can't go, and I must go, and my children, all of that sort of stuff. And it's a reality. Lots of skills are packing their bags, and you're getting lots of anecdotal evidence of that. But there's also the counterbalance of this, and South Africa has always been a magnet for immigration, for skills coming in. And Angel Jones gave us a call last week. She is with the Homecoming Revolution and admits it's a little tougher to draw skills to South Africa than it might have been during the Mandela years. But there is an immigration effect too.
And Bruce, but you know, I'm really not keen to try and motivate immigration. My argument is, look at the performance of our economy. This last week, we were notified about a 2% drop in economic performance. Quite honestly, the time is now finished to tinker with new ideologies and possible strategies. And I think we need to hit quite hard one or two big, bold initiatives as South Africa, as a government, as an...
Jacob Zoom has just waded in on Twitter to the whole policy certainty debate.
Mm.
Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, exactly. But if we take a bold initiative and say, why should we create an environment to source carefully and select very carefully, strategically, 100,000 immigrants. If we were to do that, why would it work? Who should they be? What should be the basis of it? And what can we benefit from it?
We've seen societies around the world target certain sectors of the population. You need IT skills in your country. I think the Irish did it for a while. The Australians sort of open and close taps as necessary, depending on what the needs are for their economy, whether it be mining engineers or whether it be tech specialists or whether it be road builders, whatever they need in their economy. So we need a couple of these people. Open the taps, get some applications, pick the best ones, boom, and then you can close the taps again as and when you need to.
Mm, absolutely right. And there are two things that we are facing at the moment. So interestingly, and this is something that people forget, we have remarkably quite a well-diversified economy. You know, for example, the British economy is 80% services and consumption, 20% industrial. We sit with a 30% industrial flavor to our economy. It's a broad economy. And I listen to government bang on about the fourth industrial revolution. And Bruce, it's an absolute reality. It is going to happen. But if we are going to capitalize on the fact that we've got a very good industrial economy, if we are going to be part of creating the fourth industrial revolution rather than a consumer of it and recipient of it, my argument is forget chasing investment. Let's chase talent. Because the way that investment works is investment follows talent in the following way. Talent comes into an environment, and in order to create opportunity, it competes. And it competes at a level that drives innovation. And innovation attracts investment. And investment attracts more talent. And more talent competes further to create more innovation. And so the cycle goes. There's a very good reason why Israel, with only 10 million people, attracts 38% of global VC into its country. 38% with only 10 million people.
Now you need to slow down and explain what you're talking about here, because there's a chief executive of a company, and I said to him, what's the best book you've ever read? And he said, I can't talk about this publicly, but it's called Startup Nation.
Absolutely.
And
right.
It's all about Israel. And the trouble is, if you talk positively about Israel, you seem to be anti-Palestinian. If you're anti-Palestinian, then you are a bad person. And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the capacity of a country to invest in itself and its skills, and to be very selective in what it does and the skills it attracts to its economy. That's what we're talking about.
Absolutely right. So if I'm to choose 100,000 people on this basis, I would be looking for 100,000 people that are qualified in any of the STEM categories. So sciences, mathematics, engineering, technology.
But everybody wants those, and they will go to environments that are most attractive to them. And South Africa right now, frankly, yes, the sun shines, but it doesn't have too much else going from it from a PR perspective to add to that particular mix.
I completely agree with you, but I'm speaking about building this in as a strategy for the country.
Right.
If government decided that this is a viable option and government put together a program that would attract it, Many other countries have done it. I have absolutely no doubt we're capable of doing it. The reason that we should chase STEM is because if you look at the industrial economy and you look at everything that we have to offer there, in order to build, in order to convert our industrial economy into a modernized economy, one that's going to be supported with Internet of Things devices and artificial intelligence and data and machine learning and so it goes, one that will be able to perform and compete with industrial economies abroad, we need very diverse skills and we need hard technical skills within that domain.
It's not like South Africa hasn't done this before. As South Africa was drawing the lager closed, as apartheid South Africa was drawing the lager closed around itself between 1960 and 1969, the fastest decade of growth, by the way. I think we averaged growth of 6.3% a year during that decade. What was happening during that decade was that the nationalists understood that they were going to not be able to buy stuff from overseas and would have to be self-sufficient. So they created the likes of the Arms Corps, they created the likes of the Sasols during that decade, and it was during that decade that they imported plenty of foreign skills. They made it very attractive for foreigners to come into South Africa to bring their skills to work in these industries and to build an industrial base for an apartheid state. And whatever the motives of the people who came during that time, they came in their droves, and some stayed and some are still around, and many went home afterwards. But the apartheid state succeeded in growth. During that time, it was exclusionary growth. Somehow we've got to encourage those international skills, those highly skilled people to come in. And in doing that, get inclusive growth. So not to come and say there's a harvesting opportunity for foreign skills, come in and rape and pillage and take away as much as you want to, come play Coleman Andrews on our economy. Mm. It's about come in and invest with us in this economy, bring your skills, help us grow this thing, stay or go back once you've done your project, that's fine. But let's draw some of those skills.
Oh, I'm thinking further than that. I'm thinking about startup visas and opportunities where we give people an opportunity to establish business here, survive in business here, thrive in business here, and create a life here. And that's why the second part, besides the qualifications that we need, would be where we find these potential immigrants from. Because there have been a fascinating case of studies that was done around Pune in India, which has become in many ways one of the big tech hubs of the world. And Bruce, what they claimed that Pune was built on something called the Indian Argonauts. And the Indian Argonaut really is an expression to describe how young people who had good mathematical capabilities left India, went to the west coast of the United States, got access into opportunities right within the tech heart of America. Some stayed. Many left and came back to Pune. And what they did is they brought all the relationships they had from the west coast of the US. They brought all the insight, the talent, the skills they had developed, and they established Pune as one of the biggest outsourced software development centers in the world, feeding into the relationship they had in the States. So if we pick the countries that we want to trade with, and that's where we source our immigrants, by definition, they're going to have relationships over there that none of us have at the moment. They're going to find routes of trade because that's familiarity for them. And they're going to see how that cross-trade opportunity itself can support the growth of the economy. We can expect to have innovation. We can expect to have diversity. And those two things are massive when it comes to building not only innovation, but export revenues too.
Pavlo Fotiades, Auric Business Accelerator's Dreaming Big this evening, talking about a future that we can have if we choose it. And that is, it comes down to choice. It is not a complicated thing. As a country, we simply go, we don't have skills. We don't have the correct incentives in place to draw skills to the country. So create those incentives. Create those opportunities. Let's invite people in and say, come and share your genius with us and let us all benefit from us. You may get a tax break. You may get an opportunity to build a business. There are some great skills in South Africa. There are lots of willing hands in South Africa, and willing hands that need to be properly guided, willing hands that need to be properly upskilled, willing hands, willing brains, for goodness sake, that can do a lot of the work that needs to be done. There are some great examples of startups in small scale in South Africa doing amazing global work. But we need another 10,000 of them to really have an impact. More with Pavlo in a moment. Okay, so we're coming up with a crazy idea this evening of getting people into the country, people with skills, the sort of skills we need to get the growth we need to create the opportunities, to create the environment which will bring the investment that we need. And we need people with qualifications and talent. We need people, young people. People are going to move. We've got a runway ahead of them. But I'll take some older engineers. I'll take some older techies, people who, you know, who are approaching retirement. I'll take people who want to have a bit of a cozy slowdown in their lives, come for a bit of an adventure in South Africa. We've got a country where there are lots of skills. And we've also got a country with lots of problems. We've got a country with great problems to fix, the holes in the chain, so to speak.
Completely. In fact, the more problems there are, the more opportunities there are. And Bruce, you know, the process of engineering. So, for example, let's say you're going to do and take on a big, bold engineering task of some sort. It needs consulting engineers. It needs design engineers. It needs electrical engineers. It needs safety engineers. The list of engineers that collaborate together to create a cohesive strategy around establishing a big project. And incidentally, we are about 150 billion rands behind in our infrastructure spend in terms of what we need to support growth. That level of diversity requires cross-sectional skills right across the engineering frame, per se. If we don't plug those holes fast, it simply slows things down. And if we don't plug those holes fast, when we do make the big investments into our big infrastructure programs, we're going to be offering those opportunities to foreign-owned engineering firms. We will never develop the in-house capability as a country that we could then leverage and offer into the rest of Africa, which is also lagging extensively in infrastructure programs. So if we attract that talent on board now and we release and we implement our infrastructure program, it immediately creates viable opportunities for that talent to come to the party. And in coming to that party, it doesn't replace jobs at all. These are highly skilled jobs. These are jobs with people who've built some of the biggest bridges in the world and some of the biggest tunnels in the world. If we find those people and we attract them into the country to establish business over here, that's how we plug those holes and those gaps. And that's how we get ahead of the fourth industrial revolution.
But how would you make it attractive for those people to bring their skills here and not take them to Azerbaijan or to the Gold Coast of Australia or to the West Coast of the United States or the East Coast of the United States or into Europe or into, frankly, places that are more stable and have, okay, not everywhere is stable and not everywhere doesn't have crazy people, but you get my point.
I get your point 100%. And that's what competing is all about. If we keep things as they are, implement this strategy, this is a single strategy. It would be part of a fabric of strategies that could turn this country around. The leading precept to any strategy is, what do you stand for? You need to say to yourself, in any business, for example, what is my purpose? What is my raison d'être? What is the reason for being? Why am I going to do what I'm going to do? And if I'm going to do what I want to do in order to build a business, how do I position myself in a competitive environment? If we treat South Africa not as a country, but as an incorporated business, my question is, and I cannot find the answer anywhere, what is our vision? How are we going to play in the global value chain of the economy? And where are we going to show, hey, we want to own this piece, and this piece? And where is the strategy to then bring that to life? If we're going to play in the industrial space in Africa, then importing people with these skills, bringing these people in with these skills, is going to be fundamental.
So often, though, people see the opportunity of immigration as a threat. You're coming in here, you're bringing in these so-called skills, and they'll throw the Barclays app, for example, a whole bunch of skills that caused huge disruptions at APSA, and it set APSA back a decade in terms of its competitiveness in the local South African environment because other banks didn't have the interference of a Barclays agenda in their space. So please don't tell me that these foreign skills come in and make a difference. And that's quite a compelling argument.
It's a very compelling argument. And I'm not talking about established foreign direct investment or entities. I'm talking about human capital, talent. I'm talking about a 35-year-old, preferably married, preferably with one kid.
Or two. Okay.
In Europe, where things are moving sideways, educated at the cost of European taxpayers in European universities, not at our cost, about to enter the prime of their taxpaying career, who's looking for something to give his or her life meaning and to feed their family. Those kinds of individuals, wherever they may be, in whichever parts of the world, if we attract them here, on the promise that that we're offering an opportunity to create a life and a business. Let me tell you who's done it really well. So in the United States, of the 64 $1 billion valued startup unicorns last year, of the 64, just over 50% were foreign started and owned.
I was going to say.
Just over 80% of them had in their product development leaders who were immigrants and significant senior members of their teams who were all immigrants. Now, they never came and took jobs from anyone. Those businesses created economy where there was no economy. And that's the kind of strategy I'm referring to over here.
We've got to innovate if we're going to survive. If we're going to thrive, we need new ideas. We need fresh blood. We need new ideas for people to come in. And that way a country gets a return on investment. And that investment is the compromise you make to get people in.
Mm, very much so. And I'll give you a very, very good indication of it. So I work with this particular Italian fellow in the UK. He immigrated into the UK because the UK was the best geared entrepreneurial environment at the early stages of the EU. Today, he runs and earns, he does about 8-9 million pounds sterling turnover, and he runs and earns the biggest importing and distribution business into the UK of Italian foodstuffs. He has created a burgeoning Italian restaurant industry, Italian cookery shows, and through that, the number of jobs that were created to support and surround that were remarkable. He also entered into the UK at the time when he was at the early stages of his prime economic career. And Bruce, I cannot remember the amount of tax he's paid. And that's where the return on investment comes. Someone with different ideas, different relationships from a different economy, creating business that didn't exist before, purely to survive because you have to do things differently, and all the while paying taxes on revenues that we never would have had in the first place. That's the return on investment, along with the jobs, by the way.
Pavlo Vatilius, Auric Business Accelerator, this evening on The Money Show, as he is every Thursday night, with some big ideas on how to make the country a more attractive investment destination. Get the skills in and the investment will follow.